Thank you for listening to this Podcast One Sportsnet production, available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Welcome to Real GM Radio. I'm Daniel Rue, your host, and so happy to have you with us for this episode. This is the first of the Division Capsules. It's a feature that I did last year on Real GM Radio, and reader response was great to bring it back. What the idea is to recap the offseason that just finished and preview the season that is upcoming. And so the episode is split in two, and this one is on the Southeast Division. And my guests are Mike Prada of SB Nation and the founder of Bullets Forever, and Robbie Calland of CBS Sports. And they both have knowledge of the teams in the area. It was a lot of fun to have them. The conversation is, yeah, it's pretty evenly split. It's a 50-minute conversation, about 25 on what just happened and about 25 on the season to come. We also hit on some other Eastern Conference topics, including who's beating the Cavs or who has a shot at beating the Cavs and things like that. So hope you enjoy it. Thank you guys so much for coming on.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for having us.
So I think the place to start with this is a more fundamental question, and I'll just start with Mike, is in this division, who do you think got better and who do you think got worse?
I think everybody got better except for the Hawks. Sorry, Robbie. Just think the Hawks lost DeMar Carroll. They got major injury concerns with Kyle Korver and Cephalosha. And, you know, Tiago Slee is a good addition, but I think they're worse. Everybody else, I think, you know, Miami presumably will be healthier than last year. I think Washington, they discovered their new identity and they're going to play small more often, so they should be better as well. Charlotte, I think, you know, I'm not sure they're a great team, but replacing what Lance Stevenson was last year with what Nicholas Batum probably will be this year. He had a bad year last year too, but that's an upgrade. And Orlando's getting a new coach and more experience with their young guys. So I think four teams got better, and then only Atlanta, just because I think they were at such a high perch, got worse.
Yeah, I mean, you can't argue with that. I don't think the offseason – I've heard some people say that Atlanta had a borderline disastrous offseason just because they couldn't get Carroll back. And it's more that people are just so down on Tim Hardaway Jr., understandably. And, you know, I mean, it just depends – it really depends on what you think of Justin Holiday and what he can do as a legit – role player in the NBA. I think the Hawks will still be fine and still be at the top of the division along with Washington. I think those are your two teams with, you know, Miami's, I think, going to be in the conversation this year. A little, you know, kind of the way we thought they would be last year. I think a lot of people jumped the gun on Miami last year thinking that they would be better than they were. Obviously, they had the injury concerns. But, yeah, you know, I think Washington, I like the Jared Dudley acquisition. I think he can come in and kind of be – one, he's a good locker room guy, which, you know, I think they needed somebody, Paul Pierce leaving. I think they needed, you know, kind of a locker room guy to fill a little bit of that void. And then, you know, they've got some good players. Obviously, they have good players coming back with Wall and Beal. And, you know, Miami, I like Justice Winslow. I think he's gonna be pretty good. And then Orlando and Charlotte are in different versions of a rebuild. Charlotte's kind of taking a stab at it this year, trying to get themselves back in that 8-seed area, hoping Nick Batum's something again. And then I like where Orlando's at. I think Orlando's the team that's on the rise and has the best prospects in the next 4 or 5 years if they keep building along. I really like a lot of their guys.
Yeah, so I think Atlanta's – I'm surprised you say that. I mean, their offseason, obviously they lose Carroll. That's a big name. But, you know, my concern with them is not what they did this summer – yeah, because the one guy you didn't mention that I think is actually a big addition if he stays healthy is Tiago Splitter.
Yeah,
sure.
You
know? No, absolutely. I think he's going to be great.
Yeah, the concern I have is that their two starting wing players are coming off really serious injuries. You know, Korver with his ankle and Cephalosha with his ankle. I just have concerns that they're not going to be ready for the start of the year. And, you know, Korver is like maybe 10% less quick than he was last year. I think that affects his game so much, and it affects Atlanta's offense so much. You know, a 10% drop in his effectiveness could really make a big difference. So, you know, that's the root of my concern. I think they'll be fine on the wing if they were all healthy. You know, they can replace Carroll with, you know, Cephalosha if he's healthy. Kent Bazemore, you didn't mention, could step up. I like Justin Holliday. I think he's a good player. If Korver's a little worse, I think it really hurts them.
Yeah, I mean, my main concern is just Carroll took that step kind of last year, over the last year and a half, and he took such a big step and got himself paid, which I still think was, just for what you're getting, Toronto overpaid, but Toronto kind of has to overpay anybody just to get somebody. And I was happy for him, and he should get that money. But I do think, Baze is a 10-minute, 15-minute a night guy. I mean, we saw when he had to run a lot when Thabo got hurt. Things went downhill pretty quickly. I mean, he's just such an energy guy. When those legs start to go a little bit, when he plays 25 a night, 30 a night in successive nights, he loses a lot. His form gets worse on the shot, and he just kind of loses some of his effectiveness and gambles a little more. I still like him as a role guy, but I do think losing Damari is fairly significant just from a depth perspective. You know, if Thabo can come back, and he's probably not going to be ready for the start of the season, like the very beginning. But if Thabo can come back in December and be the Thabo that he was towards the end of the year before the injury, then, yeah, I think they'll be okay. But there is a depth issue, which we saw last year in the playoffs without Thabo, that I still don't think Tim Hardaway or Justin Holliday are quite there to fill that void. Splitter's going to be really good. I think the front court got vastly better by trading Paro out for Splitter. That's a really good move.
Yeah, the dynamic with the Hawks, for me, that's so interesting is this is a team last year that was heavily reliant on their starting five, but their starting five was awesome, so you can do that. You know, if your starting five's great, you can do that. But now their starting five got worse. I mean, whoever they replaced Carroll with is inferior to Carroll, which is fine. That's the way it is.
Sure.
But their depth is so much more interesting because Splitter is a legit player, so that means they're getting 48 good minutes at center, maybe even 48 great minutes at center. Mm-hmm. And Schroeder should be better. I mean, he's a young guy, still learning everything, still developing into his, you know, himself physically and mentally. So they have strength on the edges, and then what they're relying on is having some of that kind of group morass of swingmen to work out, and there's a distinct possibility of it. So it's a very different strength than this team had before.
Yeah, I don't know if it's so different, actually. I'm going to slightly disagree with you. I mean, obviously the starting lineup as a whole, when you just kind of put them out there, is a really talented group. They play well together, and they don't have like that one single player. But last year, wasn't the complaint that they didn't play their starters enough? That they were kind of mixing and matching their bench too much, and that they would be better served just kind of playing their best five guys more minutes? They kind of tried to do the San Antonio, like, let's mix our guys so that we don't have any periods where there's a drop-off, you know, I think during the season. That was why I think Splitter's a big addition, because the second center on that team is going to play a lot of minutes. I mean, ideally, you kind of split those three front court players fairly evenly. I mean, that's Pontus came in really early for Horford. You know this as well as anyone, Robbie. They're very conservative with Horford and foul trouble, probably too conservative.
Yeah.
With that in mind, I actually don't know if the identity of the team changes significantly. The problem they run into, again, I think, is just that all their starters are important. You know, if you lose one, it certainly affects the whole operation in, like, in a holistic way. If you look at the whole team, it's not just the five guys. But they're, I just think, so reliant on the way Korver plays, and if he's not himself, that it's a big loss. I think the bench is better as it is right now, and I think it doesn't change the way they look at themselves as a team and an organization too much. I think
No. It's
just a matter of they'll get one of those guys to play the minutes that Carroll plays. They'll figure that out, but, you know, it's just if Korver and Cephalosha are not themselves, it's, I think, a big loss. I don't think it's a real change with the team, I guess, is what I'm saying, in terms of their style and the way they kind of organize their rotation.
No, I don't think it's a change in the style. I think it actually is a little better from that perspective. I mean, That was the complaint, really more in the playoffs, because the bench was great in like January, but really it was when they had Fabo and stuff. But the complaint was in the playoffs when they were playing guys 32 a night, and that starting five was beating people by, you know, eight points per 36 when they're on the floor or whatever, and when they were off the floor, the Hawks were getting beat pretty bad. So, no, I agree from that perspective, but I do think, you know, I mean, I think the front court depth is better. I hope Dennis takes another step because he's a really fun player. I think, again, people kind of assume there's kind of a lineal type growth with these guys, and he took a huge step last year. Like a huge step to go from a non-NBA player to a legit NBA player. And I just don't know what the next step is. I think it might start going a little slower for him because he's on tape now. Last year was really his like rookie year from a playing standpoint. And so he's on tape now. Guys know how to attack him both defensively and offensively. So I think, you know, I've been kind of trying to temper the Dennis excitement just from the standpoint of he's going to be really good. We're pretty sure of that, but it might not be this year that he's, you know, that guy. That's
you
my
think,
one concern.
You think there's you think there's going to be any Schroeder key tension this year? I don't know. I just wonder.
I don't think so. I think that's really going to be in the contract year because both of them have the contract year up after this year. I think they'll be okay this year. They've got a pretty good rapport between the two of them. I mean, when you spend time in the locker room with both speak well of the other, and there doesn't seem to be a lot of tension. I mean, I think if Dennis gets off to a hot start, maybe you start to see that. And I really think it's just a matter of, does Dennis get it in his head that he should be playing more? Teague's not a confrontational guy. I don't think it's going to come from Jeff. Just knowing Jeff, that's not his style. But Dennis, you know, Dennis thinks highly of himself, which is a good thing and also a bad thing sometimes. So, yeah, that's going to be interesting to watch if Dennis gets going. I mean, there is a time last year where it didn't seem like there was really tension, but, I mean, Bud would just ride Dennis for an entire fourth quarter. Like, he didn't have a problem doing that. He'd bench Jeff. He didn't care.
And what's hard? Can you play them together? I've always seen that as if you're comfortable with that.
Yeah, I'm fine with them. I'm fine with them playing together. And you know, it's actually kind of a nice little way when you have a smaller backcourt that they're facing. It's kind of a nice way to break up some of that, as you kind of mentioned, the swing man. We don't know who's it kind of takes some of those minutes away that you don't have to put on Bays and you don't have to put on Justin Holiday yet or Tim Hardaway yet. I think it's when you have a smaller backcourt, because Dennis can kind of handle himself. It's going to be I think when you can put those two point guards on the floor, they work pretty well together. Jeff's done it before. I mean, Bud's made Jeff play with Shelvin Mack a lot like 2 years ago. So Jeff doesn't have a problem with it. And I kind of like getting Jeff off the ball some, let him spot up a little bit. It's kind of nice because he kind of will bog it down a little bit. So you can play them together. 8 minutes a night if you need to kind of keep those minutes high on both guys. But yeah, I mean, if Dennis starts thinking that he's starting caliber, that's where you could see him kind of get a little frustrated. And it's going to be interesting to see how Bud handles that.
I'm curious if one of them goes out for like a couple games with a nagging injury and you see what happens to the other one. Although I guess it happened a little bit.
That happened last year when Jeff
January.
Went out with the ankle thing or whatever. I think it was an ankle.
Yeah.
He rolled it. He rolled his ankle a couple times last year. And there were a couple times where Dennis was fantastic and came in and had like almost 20-10s, I think. He had a couple like 19-8s, 16-12 games, and he was great. And then there were some other times where he had 7 turnovers and was a kid. So I think that's where you saw. I think it was actually kind of helpful to see that last year, as you saw him in those tough spots. Bud ran him down the fourth quarter, and you could see the potential. You saw the times where he was fantastic, and then you also saw the times where he looked like a 20-year-old.
One other off-season thing I wanted to talk about is any opinions you guys had. I guess start with Robbie. It could be the best move, the worst move, or most interesting. Just something a transaction that happened this summer that you thought was compelling.
Oh man, in this division, I think. For me, I'm really interested to see what the hell Tim Hardaway can do. You know, I've talked to the front office guys about it. they didn't, it was funny, they didn't really expect the backlash they got on it, which I was like, man, you kind of traded the 15th pick for Tim Hardaway. Like, what did you expect? they believe in the guy. They believe in him. They think he was in an awful situation in New York. They think it was a terrible fit for him. They think he just wasn't learning how to play basketball, which they're probably right. But the question is, does the guy want to work to get better, or is he pretty content to shoot and be Tim Hardaway Jr.? You know, he's the only guy I've ever seen that heat checks a dunk with a three on the next possession. I've seen him do it like three times against Atlanta, which is a small sample size. So if he's done that, he's going to drive Bud nuts at times. And getting Thabo back will be good, and having Justin Holiday there where you can kind of be like, look, man, like, you got to get it together and play some defense. And they're taking a gamble. This is, you know, Damari Carroll's a hard worker. I mean, that's what he prides himself on. Same with Kent Bazemore. The system and kind of their player development has worked for those two guys very well. This is your test of that. Do you have the culture that's going to make a guy work that maybe doesn't want to as much? A guy that, you know, Damari's going to spend all the time in the gym that you allow him. He would do like midnight sessions over the summer. Can you get Tim Hardaway to buy in and play hard on the defensive end and that sort of thing? And that's, for me, that's why it's the most intriguing in this division, is just from an insider and outsider perspective, I want to see kind of how that works. Because I've seen it work for hardworking guys. I haven't seen it tested with a guy who maybe doesn't have the work ethic of Damari or Kent Bazemore. And so I'm interested to see if they can get him to buy in. Outside of that, Nick Batum's really interesting to me because he was really good, like, what, 2 or 3 years ago? Like,
2 years ago,
yeah. Yeah, we were talking about, like, one of the better 3-and-D guys in the league, and all of a sudden last year he can't shoot. Really interesting to see what he does.
It was weird.
It was super weird.
Well, he had a wrist issue from what I recall.
Right, but, you know, I mean,
true.
Like,
he did.
You know, if you grind through a wrist injury, sometimes it doesn't all the way come back.
That's true.
I've had that.
Well, so. And I don't know with Batum. I've had trouble since they made the move. I like a lot of their pieces. This is actually true of Orlando as well. But I'm still not sure how they fit together. And like, I've had some people tell me, oh, you play Batum at the four, and that sounds fun to me, but they just drafted...
I don't like that.
They just drafted Kaminsky.
How are they going to play Batum at the four? They have no guards.
They have no guards. Yeah, exactly.
Jeremy Lamb becomes the guy that Oklahoma City drafted.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Jeremy
Lamb.
That's
right. I do have him.
Sure.
Yeah, I was also – the team also intrigued me. You know, I've never been the biggest fan of his game. I just think he's a little bit of a floater sometimes. There's some games where he looks lights out. He also has too many skills, and sometimes it doesn't always know what to do with all of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always wondered about – the thing I think is that actually he might fit in well there is that offensive system is pretty structured. I think – a couple things he does really well. He's very good at entry passes. So if you're going to play a post-oriented system, he's very good at kind of coming off the UCLA action, coming out to the wing, and then throwing the ball in the post. I think that's a positive. And I think all the things he does will take some pressure off of Kier Gilchrist a little bit to kind of – he can now fill in the gaps a little more easily. You know, I envision them playing those two guys on the wing because I don't really see how else they're going to run they're going to structure their team. They have,
right?
Geez, how many fours and fives do they have? They have Zeller, they have Kaminsky, they have Tyler Hansbrough, they have Marvin Williams.
And then we have one that's proven. The only one that's proven is Al Jefferson.
Right.
Oh, I guess Haas is proven in a different way.
Well,
we know what Tyler Hansbrough is.
Jesus,
fact
that the Hawks have to play him four times a year. Okay, I'm going to hijack this real quick.
Sure.
In light of the Geno Smith thing with the Jets getting punched in the face, is Hansbrough the most punchable dude in an NBA locker room? Like, I don't think so.
You know what's funny?
As soon as
you said the word punch, I thought about Batum on Juan Carlos Navarro, which is a moment
that
everyone forgets.
Yeah.
That was a punch of some kind. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a different kind.
It was like a hammer punch.
Right.
It was a downward thrusting punch to the nether regions.
He kind of spun it around and wound up.
Yeah.
He ran halfway across the court to do it. That moment, like, that's one of those, if that had happened, like, 3 years later when basketball Twitter was a little bit bigger and games, those kind of random games were being broadcast, that would have been such a bigger thing.
Yeah, 100%.
I guess what you're saying is that Tyler Hensley should wear a cup during practice.
Yeah, and a face cup.
And I believe they call those masks.
Yeah, I don't know. I have to poll some players to see who they think is the most touchable person in the league.
You know, that would be fun to do on, like, an anonymous tip.
They should do that instead of the, like, what player gets the most from the least thing. They should do something like that.
Dude, the player awards.
That's true. Imagine him having to come up and receive that honor at the Las Vegas banquet.
He'd own it, though. He'd totally own it.
Oh, my God, yeah. But, like, I'm just trying to think, is there anybody
would they give
him, like,
a trophy with? Would they give him a trophy with, like, a boxing glove?
Yeah, it's got to be that.
Well, so are we talking about face and demeanor? Because I feel like...
That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying you look...
The total package. Because isn't Chris Paul in that conversation, too? Like, I feel like Chris Paul, every single player who plays against Chris Paul in a 7-game series wants him dead.
I mean, like, Patrick Beverley's up there.
Yeah, Patrick Beverley's up there. I almost now feel bad about having this conversation because maybe they're all delightful human beings. But, I've had some great conversations
with Chris Paul. I've had some really wonderful conversations with Chris Paul, but playing against him would make me want to kill
him. Yeah, I mean, look, I'm just asking, like, who would least surprise you if you heard they got their jaw broken in, like, a locker room fight? Like, if you heard that, who would be the least surprising guy in the league to have gotten his jaw broken? Maybe who would be the least surprising to have broken the other person's jaw?
I think it's Lance Stephenson and Chris Paul. I feel like...
Chris... Oh, my God, I forgot they're playing together.
Yeah, but so is Chris Paul, like, as insufferable when he's not on the court, though?
I feel like he might not be
in the locker room, but in the practice court, I can imagine he's insane.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I would say it would have to be on the court. I mean, didn't Lance Stephenson supposedly get into a fight with Evan Turner?
Well, that doesn't surprise me.
That's
at all.
Another guy who's up there, by the way.
I'm going to be honest. Like, that should have been like a Rocky III moment where they both knock each other out.
That probably would have helped out that team.
anywho. But that was just a fun little question.
Yeah, well, we'll transition into the rookie in this that you're most excited to see. I separate that from best because rookies aren't supposed to be good, but who you're most excited to see play.
Can I take this one?
Oh, I think there's only one answer.
It's Mario Hezonja.
Yeah, it has to be Mario.
Oh, it's not Kelly Oubre?
No, you said play,
didn't you?
I'm a member of
the team. There are only two that are going to play, or three that are going to play, and nobody wants to watch Frank Kaminsky. Like, nobody's, like, psyched that Frank Kaminsky hits the floor. Justice Winslow would be it, if not for the fact that Mario Hezonja just, like, I was enthralled watching him play Summer League games in Orlando. Like, he was exciting then. And if you can make me somewhat excited to watch Summer League basketball, like, yeah, I'm in. Like, there were only, like, three guys in Vegas that I was like that with. And by the end, I was over them. So, yeah, I'm super
speaking
excited
of people
about
this. Speaking of people who may, their teammates may want to punch at some point.
Ooh. Yeah.
Just saying.
That wouldn't stop.
How do we know that that Aaron Gordon injury wasn't Mario Hezonja doing?
What's fun about Hezonja as somebody who's watched him for years is that he can come out of nowhere at moments. You know, like, he'll just, all of a sudden, he'll just, like, dunk on someone, and you'll just be sitting there like, wait, that just happened. And he, because he has the physical ability, and what makes him different than a guy like Gerald Green is that he has the confidence and the swagger already. I mean, he's played in the second best league in the world. He's done a good job there. He'll take a 35-footer if he feels he'll make it.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is, like, I think he also just doesn't care what anybody thinks, which is just fantastic. Like, I mean, I'm sure y'all have seen, like, the very end of a blowout game, he, like, strips the guy and, like, runs down the sideline and does, like, a windmill dunk with 1 second on the clock. Like, that's a hero move for me. Like, that was when I was all in. That's my guy.
Yeah, I mean, the concern I'd have is that he'll drive Scott Skiles so crazy that he won't play enough.
That's also a concern, but that's also an interesting storyline to follow. He's definitely the most interesting rookie in the Southeast Division. Part of that is because, like, one of them's not going to play, Kelly. One team doesn't have one, Hawks.
And what about Justice? I mean, Justice is interesting.
Justice is probably going to be the best, just because situation, I think, is best for him. Like, because Zonia might actually have to, like, do a lot in Orlando. Like, depending on what group he plays with, if he plays with that second unit and, like, Elf and Depot aren't really on the floor, like, he might actually have to create a lot more. So, Justice is in a really good spot.
Yeah, I think Justice might. He's gonna be good. He could have a playoff moment as early as this season. Possibly.
Yeah, I mean, like, I like Justice a fair amount.
I'm gonna slightly disagree that Pazonia is in a better spot than Winslow. I think he'd need Winslow really badly to be a competent player because I just think their wing depth is really not quite there. I mean, you have to assume that Wade's gonna miss a bunch of games.
Well, yeah, injury. He's missing 25.
Yeah, you just have to assume that he's gonna miss a couple. Right, so you have to assume that in those 20-something games, you're going to need Winslow to start. Luol Deng is getting up there. I think he declined a little bit last year, especially defensively. They have Gerald Green, but he's kind of more of like a use in case of emergency type of piece. I don't think you
break the glass on the bench.
Right. So I don't think he's the kind of guy that you can hold down like a starting job for a quarter of the season. They need Winslow to be ready to go right away. I think there's a lot of pressure on him. And the other thing is that there's a lot more that team is really in win-now mode. They've got to be good this year because you look at their books, they're really building towards something big right now. He's going to have to play in more high-profile spots. I mean, he can handle it. I just think it's...
Sure.
You know, Hazonia, they have a lot of options on the wing, you know, even though they're not a good team. You know, he doesn't have to play. He doesn't have to start. You know, they have some vets behind their start, their two young guards, who I think are going to play a lot. They need those guys to develop. You know, they don't need, if he's great, I think it's important for their long-term future, but I don't think they really need him to show a lot right away. I think Miami needs Winslow to be able to step right in and give him quality minutes right away.
I mean, that's fair. I just think Winslow will have the better season, is really all. It's like, not like, you know, Hazonia's needed more, but I just think he's going to have more. I don't know. The way he plays feels like, I mean, like you said, with Skiles, it just feels like there could be some bumping of heads on what he decides to do on the court. But yeah, no, I think you're right on. That's a fair point on Justice. You know, I mean, maybe it's just because I'm not in Miami. I just don't think about them as a win now team. But you're right, the way they built themselves.
Well, yeah, I mean, Miami has a really complicated situation because of Hassan Whiteside, and we don't need to get into that. But, yeah, they have pressure, and they're in a situation where they have a lot of open flexibility next year, and Miami, with that flexibility, is a very different beast than a lot of other teams. And so what they want to do with that is fascinating.
It is, but I also think that flexibility is dependent on Dwayne Wade kind of taking another one for the team next year. And like you said, the Whiteside situation is, you know, that's difficult. They're going to have a lot of trouble keeping him. You know, just the way they have, they're an old team. I think they're going to be very good, but I think they better be very good because, you know, the starting lineup, let me look at their ages real quick. I mean, Dragic is, what, 29?
That sounds about right.
Wade is getting up there. Luol Deng is, I want to say, in his early
30s. He's 30.
30. Chris Bosh is 31, I think. And, you know, they have Whiteside's younger, but,
Whiteside's 26. He's not that young for what he is. He was such an insanely late bloomer that, like, and not only that, but you have the pressure of having Dragic and Bosch under contract, and unless you're going to do something really big to move them, the reason why I say that is there's always a possibility that they're going to be a Durant destination just because guys have gone to Miami before.
Yeah, I mean, that's as a Wizards fan, Miami is a team I fear in the Durant thing, just because it's Miami. So that's definitely true. But even Durant, I think, is not going to go there unless they look good this year. You know, they have to be good, and they have, again, they're old. They were bad defensively last year. You know, as promising as Whiteside is, they're a much better defensive team when he was on the bench last year. You look at the on-off numbers. It's still not clear if he's good in a way that a playoff team needs him to be good. Like, he's solid. You know, that's still, I think, kind of unclear. So it's nice that they have McRoberts as a security blanket to bring back if Whiteside doesn't really progress. But then you lose rim protection, and then you have to, I think, change your defensive style again. That, to me, is why they need Winslow to be able to step in and inject some youth into that team and athleticism and something different, a new edge. I just think that's super important for them with where they are. You know, this is a really a make-or-break year for their future.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. So we'll move on a little bit to the season preview, and I guess start with Mike. If you can, I was thinking of it in terms of regular season record, but you can use whatever rationale you want as long as you explain it. Ranking these teams 1-5.
Yeah, I think Miami is the best team in the division. I just think when they're at full capacity health wise, their offense is going to be really difficult to stop. I mean, you're combining the pick and roll abilities of Dragic, the pick and pop abilities of Bosch, you know, the slashing of Wade, still the creativity, and Whiteside is such a great role for it. Just imagine some of the three-man action they can have with Bosch, Dragic, and Whiteside. You know, they're a little short on shooting, but they're creative enough to match that, I think. And now, you know, they don't trade anyone. They have, the potential to have a decent bench with Mario Chalmers as the third guard, to have Gerald Green and Winslow on the wing, and McRoberts back up front. I think that's an important addition. They still have, if one of Udonis Haslam, Chris Anderson, and Amar'e Stoudemire can give him some minutes, they'll have a decent fourth big. It's just, I have questions about their defense. I don't know if they're going to be a good defensive team, but they could be, you know, second or third in offensive efficiency when it's all said and done.
Yeah. No, go ahead. 1-5.
Oh, and keep going? Okay, yeah. So I think they're one.
I'm not
watching
you pick for pick right now. I'll give my five after you go.
All right. I think Washington is two. I think they will play the same style all year. I think they're definitely talking about doing that more often, which is about time. You know, so I will feel a little better about them before Dudley had his back issues. I think that's going to be a critical loss. They're a little short on bench rim protection. They have some good wings. I wonder, we're going to see a lot of Drew Gooden and Chris Humphries, and, you know, we'll see how that plays out. I think the optimism for them is that their young three, Wall, Beal, and Porter, should all be much better. I think Beal's going to have a breakout year this year. He's got a clean summer with no injuries. Hopefully he doesn't suffer one in training camp. You know, I think he got a lot of confidence in the playoffs. I think they finally figured out that if they open the floor a little more, they make life easier for those players. They could be number one. I just think Miami's offense is going to be too good. I think Atlanta is three, and I think probably closer to Charlotte than I would say to Washington. I think it's a bit of a bold prediction. I just have a lot of concerns about Korver and Cephalosha's injuries. I just think that those are real killers if they're not back to 100% quickly. So, and I think Charlotte will be improved. I think they'll push for a playoff spot. I like Batum, Kate Jokic as a wing combo. I think they will be better. I mean, just not having last year's Lance Stevenson on the rotation will make a big difference for them. He was just terrible for them. And then I still think Orlando's a year away instead.
I still think the Hawks are the best team in the division. I don't have the same concerns about the injuries. Like, I understand them. I think Thabo will be back. Thabo is the one I have the more concerns about. Like, Korver, I just, like, the way I've seen him work and, like, the shape he keeps himself in, I have a hard time thinking he's not going to come back from that. Like, I know he's getting up there in age, but, I mean, he's in better shape now than he was 5-8 years ago when he first came in the league. So I don't have as many concerns about Korver. I understand the Thabo concerns, but I think that three-man rotation, like, I think they take a slight step back losing DeMar, but I don't think it's as big as everybody's been saying. So, like, I'm still going to take Atlanta just because that three-man rotation in the front court's as good as you're going to find, to be honest. I mean, Horford, Millsap, and Splitter, that's really good. I like Teague. I think Dennis takes a little small step, not a huge one, but he's a really solid backup point guard, and, you know, you hope the wing thing figures out. I'm a believer in Justin Holiday. I don't think the step back's nearly as big as a lot of people are projecting. That's just me.
And then how about between Miami and the Wizards?
Man, that's a freaking toss-up.
You can say that. That's fair.
Yeah, I mean, like, my thing, I think that's 2A, 2B. I mean, honestly, I think all three teams are really close at this point. I think the Hawks' step back is more putting them right in that range. Like, I don't think the Wizards or the Heat take – the Heat will take a big step forward from what they were last year because people will be healthy. But Wade's not going to be healthy all year. He just doesn't do that. I have big concerns about the defense. I just don't – like, I look at those pieces and I'm not 100% sure what they do defensively. And if they're able to really stop people, I agree the offense has the potential to be really good with what Dragic and Bosch can do. So, like, my concerns with them are defense. My concerns with Washington is, really, it's not even concerning. I just think they are what they were last year for the most part. Like, I think they maybe are slightly better, but not really record-wise. I think all those three teams are all going to be fighting for, like, the 3-7 spots in the East, to be honest. Maybe the 2. You know, I just – the East is such a weird kind of clustering behind the Cavs. You know, I think those three teams are all kind of in the same area. You know, the Hawks, I'm just going to keep them right there because I kind of know a little more. And I trust Horford and Millsap and Splitter a little more than any other trio. And I know – Wall and Beal are good. I'm not as high on Beal as everybody else. People can slam me for that, but he's a good player. But I don't think he's like a superstar player, and I don't think he's going to get there this year. And then I agree. I think it's Charlotte addition by subtraction with Lance Stephenson. Interesting to see how they do with Batum and them. And then Orlando's going to be maybe the most fun team to watch, but they're going to be bad again. Like, they're going to be – I love Oladipo. I love Elfrid Payton, even though he killed my Georgia State Panthers when he was at Louisiana, and obviously Hazonia, and they've got so many fun pieces. Tobias Harris is really good. And they're just not there yet. It's going to be interesting to see how Skiles kind of works those guys around and gets them to play some defense, but that's what I see. I mean, like, I could totally see the Hawks maybe taking a step back, but I think Korver will be fine. I think that I have a lot more faith in Korver being Kyle than Mike does.
Yeah, I think my opinion is right between the two of you, is that I think Miami is the best team in talent, but we won't see it as often, so Atlanta will finish with the best record, because we just won't see that Miami team very often in the regular season. I don't think they care as much about that as long as they're in it, and they will be in it. And as you guys said, the three of them are really close, but if I had to pick, I'd say it's Atlanta, Miami, Washington, but I wouldn't be surprised in any order. Then Charlotte, Orlando. I think Orlando is going to have a struggle, but what people forget about with this Orlando team, because they're really young, is they were horrible defensively last year. Mm-hmm. And that not only are they more experienced, but they have a way better coach for that now. So if they can step up the defense to even like a league average level or close to that for a portion of the season, I don't think they'll be good, but they'll be a whole lot better. And
they're going to be really annoying to play every
night. Oh, yeah, exactly.
Like, they're just going to they frustrated the hell out of the Hawks last year. Like, they're just they just have pieces that on any given night, if like three of them click, you could lose. You know, I mean, like, if Depot figures it out, if Depot's shooting well that night and Tobias Harris is knocking down corner threes in the mid-range and Elf isn't turning it over, like, they're trouble. And Vucevic and Vucevic.
But it's a big jump from 25 wins to the playoffs, even in the
East. What I'm saying is they're going to be really annoying to play.
Yeah. They're
still going to be wildly inconsistent.
And also, almost all of the non-playoff teams in the East got substantially better, other than the Sixers and the Pacers. And the Pacers are going to have Paul George, so you could argue that he alone will make them substantially better. So there will be teams like the Nets that will probably fall back, but they're going to be facing a more competitive group. That isn't to say that they'll lose games. It's just there are going to be less comparatively easy wins on the schedule than there were last year.
Sure.
We say that every year, though. There's always something that happens. Someone gets hurt, and much worse than we think. I mean, I don't know. I feel like that there's always going to be somebody that just falls off. Like, what happens if, you know, Milwaukee suffers some bad injuries, or, you know, there's always something. They'll definitely be more prepared to play every night. I think there was a little bit of a kind of a crystal ball feel with them. You never really knew which answer you were getting on a given night. That's a bad analogy, but let's roll with it anyway.
Box of chocolates,
that was what I was looking for. I couldn't think of it.
Crystal ball. I was like, crystal ball means you can see the future. That's the opposite.
Box of chocolates is what I was going for.
Okay. I was going to let you cook, Mike.
Yeah, so I think that we're all probably in agreement in terms of how many playoff teams this division's going to get. regardless of the order.
Yeah.
Three?
I mean,
I think Charlotte's going to be close.
Yeah, I think they'll be close, too.
Exactly. I'm not sure if I like them. I like them more than Indiana. Yeah, I'm for the 700 straight off season, I'm way too high on Detroit, so I'm just going to have to adjust that bias.
Checking at the door, Mike.
So there's them. I'm not wild about what Indiana is doing as a short-term play. I think, you know, long-term it might make sense, but this team is like no competent big man. So I think they'll be better than them. You know, we'll see with Boston. You know, they certainly have
guards.
Pieces, but they have a lot of pieces. I don't
they
know
have
if
a lot of power
gonna...
forwards, too.
They have guards and stretch force.
Yeah, you know, I don't know and if they're going to be able to see what they did last year. We know Brooklyn's going to be, I think, a lot worse.
Oh, they're going to be terrible.
You know, in the grand scheme of things. So I think there's a chance Charlotte sneaks in there. You know,
they had a
lot of injuries last year.
Sure, it's three for sure. When they also had Lance. So I think we're pretty set the three get in somewhere between the 2-7 mark. And then, like you said, I mean, Charlotte could fight for that. And the Atlantic's still the Atlantic. So you got Toronto, and then, yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, and so you have that, like, there's a weird pocket around that 8 spot. But the other reason why I think it might be 3 is that if a team is going to fall out due to injury, it very well could be one of those 3. You know, if John Wall misses, you know, like 30 games, the Wizards could fall out.
Yeah, I mean, if any of those big guys, I mean, like, it's so hard to project those injury things. I mean, you're right, though. I mean, if any of those three teams suffer significant, I think the Heat are kind of, you expect Wade, but if Bosch missed extended
or
time
Dragic.
Again.
If Dragic misses
in trouble. If they have to run Chalmers all night. Lord have mercy.
Yeah. And it's hard to predict injuries, but those three teams are a little vulnerable. Do you think either of these teams can be the second best team in the East?
Sure, I think it's I think it's a possibility. Chicago is going to have a lot to adjust to because they have a new coach and he might be running a very different rotation. And all of these teams, even with Damari, like when you think about it on the continuity scale, these teams have more continuity than pretty much anybody anywhere else. So if one of them does well early on, and they're all good. So, yeah, I think there's a very reasonable chance.
Yeah, I mean, I think they'll be
the best team in the East.
Yeah, you're really high on Miami.
I mean, I get nobody's going to be able to guard them, but I just think that nobody's going to be able to guard them.
And they have, you know, like, Amari. They have Amari, too. He could provide, you know, 15 minutes a game for them that would be useful and do something that other teams don't have.
I'd love to see, like, a productive Amari off the bench.
Yeah,
just,
awesome.
Ride off in the sunset is, like, a good role player. Well, and, like, he's one of the guys that'll accept that.
I certainly don't want to see Bosch get hurt, but if Bosch, like, misses games due to a turned ankle and we get, like, one, like, real throwback Amari game, I would just be pumped. Super pumped.
That'd be awesome. Just, like, a 30-point night from Amari.
So, Mike,
mid-January.
I have one question for you, Mike. Are we going to see the more creative playoff Whitman in the regular season this year?
I think so. I mean, they're going to play small more often. They've talked about it. Build a roster that makes sense for it. You know, I don't know if small... They know now that the Nene-Gortat pairing is not really getting the most out of both players on offense. And I think I don't know if they saved it for the playoffs. I don't really know if I totally buy that narrative. But I think it was a instructive moment to see how successful they were in the playoffs. I mean, I don't know how much to what extreme they're going to push it, with, especially with Dudley injured. Like, what I think you're going to probably see is a lot more Drew Gooden playing at the four and stretching out, and him and Dudley will kind of take a lot of those minutes. They're going to try to make Nene a back center. We'll see how that goes. I think the other thing that I think it showed is that if you give Otto Porter a little bit of space, it can really open up his game. So, I think they're going to look very different, you know, next year. The other big thing is Gortat was just so much more productive when there was space around him. I think we're going to see a lot more of it. They've talked about it publicly. I think that they are changing their style.
Just on the general Eastern Conference thing, and we can leave on this, what team do you guys think has the best chance of knocking off Cleveland in the Eastern Conference in a 7-game series?
I would say Miami.
Wow. I don't think they could defend him.
I'm not saying they do it. I just think they'd have the best chance. Sure. I think it's a big drop. You know, Chicago's the other team I thought about, but I just don't know if they have enough wing stuff on the wing. And I'm just, with Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah really decline, I just don't know if they can be as dangerous if those two guys play like they did last year. So I would probably say Miami. Well, Washington's not a bad choice either.
I just don't think anybody can. The gap is just, I feel like it's just so wide. Like, Chicago, if Derrick Rose is what everybody seems to think Derrick Rose is, he just hasn't been. You know, you get a really good Derrick Rose series, you get, maybe Hoiberg's able to keep Joakim a little fresher this year and not, like, run him into the ground so he's not dead for the playoffs. I don't know. I like Bobby Portis. He can shoot a little bit.
Chicago had their chance, I think. Last year, and they blew it.
I just can't see it, man.
Then the other question, and this will dig at Robbie a little bit. Excluding LeBron, how many starters could the Cavs lose and still win the Eastern Conference? At least two, I think.
I think it depends on who they are. A little bit. Right.
If they theoretically, let's say they again lost Love and Kyrie for the entire Eastern Conference playoffs, and I think that would they still be the favorites?
Yeah, they're the favorites. I think it would be interesting. They're still the favorites. You have LeBron James on the
Kyrie
basketball floor.
And Kevin Love.
If you have LeBron James on the basketball floor, you're the favorite. I'm not. That doesn't mean they necessarily win, but I'm just saying, like, I'm just thinking purely from a, like, if I'm setting odds. If I'm running a book, they are still slight favorites every game, like -150. Like they're still laying juice. Just from having LeBron.
I'm gonna disagree with that. I just think one of these teams, if everything breaks right for them, I think could challenge them in that situation. You know, Miami stays healthy. If Washington's young guys take the next step. If Atlanta recovers well, they have certainly the front court Atlanta. Mm-hmm. If Milwaukee takes a step forward, even I'm not saying if they lost Love and Kyrie, I don't think they could duplicate what they did last year. But you know, they certainly have a fighter's chance.
Yeah, I don't know if, like, I wouldn't bet them as the favorite. But what I'm saying is, I just think
they'd be put as the favorite.
I would put, yeah, they'd get put as the favorite still. Yeah. You know, and not even Atlanta, because nobody cares about Atlanta enough to bet them. We saw that last year.
I think it'd be Miami or Chicago.
It would have to be Miami, Chicago, or even Washington has, like, a really good year and wins the one seed for, like, the Cavs not to be favored. The Cavs were favored all throughout, despite being the two seed. And so, obviously, the Hawks lost Thabo, but, like, even with Thabo, it doesn't matter. They get swept. So, I just can't see anybody getting put as the favorite unless somebody blows out of the water and has a 60-win season that we don't see coming. Yeah. And the Cavs win, like, 57 again.
So, like last year, then.
Yeah, exactly like last year, but it can't be the Hawks. Because nobody cares enough to bet the Hawks. No one bet
the
Hawks.
Well, the other thing
year.
Is that...
Imagine if it was the Knicks.
Nobody. Oh my God. I would love that, to be honest. I would love the Knicks to set the league on fire. Like, it would be really funny because they'd lose in the second round. You know they'd
lose. I'm
going to
say X and A on the Knicks.
Oh, there's no chance
on fire being
interesting. Well, of course not. I was just saying it would be fun.
I
don't think it would be that. I don't think it would be as fun. I think that Bill would be
fun?
Really obnoxious about it.
That's your East Coast
bias,
Mike.
It would be hilarious. I'd love watching Knicks Twitter get built up only to fail. Come on, they deserve that at the least. Like, Chris Stapps is, like, averaging a triple-double. Like, Chris Stapps is Oscar Robertson.
Melo makes an All-NBA team.
Yeah. Melo's amazing. Chris Stapps is this, like, incredible and is, like, averaging, like, 20 and 10. Like, that would be fun. Really, for me, it has to involve Kristaps being really good. Because, like, I really like watching him play, and he's kind of goofy looking.
And, like, somehow they actually find guards that can play basketball.
It's not going to happen.
No.
Like, the more really we talk about it, the more ridiculous it seems. But it would be fun. It would really be fun. It would be really fun. You could cover all the games. It would be great.
Yeah, I guess so.
Mike Prater live from MSG every night.
I'd be more interested in the Bucks getting awesome, but
oh, that'd be fun.
I'd see that.
Well, the Bucks would be really fun, but I just can't. I just think that it'd be really fun. I don't think I was on Twitter last time the Knicks were good. So I just haven't seen it.
Lin Sanity was great.
Lin Sanity was incredible, but I wasn't deep in it. I don't think. Maybe I was.
I won 54 games 2 years ago?
Yeah, that hit me a little differently.
Okay,
they had 54 games and all that.
And then they fell off.
Yeah, because I covered Lin his rookie year, and so that was a whole different thing for me to see it from the side as opposed to being in it.
Yeah, that's right.
It would definitely generate more interest in our sport. So,
some buzz.
Some
clicks. From this perspective of people reading stuff we write, then yeah, I guess that would be good. So yeah. I gotta start thinking like a site manager and not like a fan.
Come on, Mike, be a company man for once in your life.
Anything else you guys want to talk about?
No, man, I think we're good. This was fun. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you guys so much. That was a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having us.
Thanks again to Mike Prada and Robbie Callen for taking the time to come on. You can read Mike. He's the NBA editor for SB Nation, and you can follow him on Twitter at Mike Prada, SBN, MikePrada, SBN. And Robbie Callen writes not only about the NBA, but he's also a very talented college football and golf writer, among other things, for CBS Sports. And you can follow him on Twitter at rcalland, RKALLAND. I appreciate both of them coming on. As I said at the outset, this is the first of the division capsules. I will do every single team over the course of the next couple months. I'm hoping to have everyone done by October 1st. It might be a little bit later. And have some really great guests lined up for that. Some first-time guests, some of my favorites. And I don't tell people for Real Jam Radio who my guests are ahead of time, just in case something happens. But you will be excited by it. Once an episode is recorded, I will say who it is. And that'll be out there. I think that's the best way to do it. So I'm not really necessarily looking for insight into guests, though if you have somebody in mind and you feel strongly, you can always reach out. Best way to get in touch with me is probably Twitter. My Twitter handle is Danny LaRue, DannyLeroux. Also, daniel.larue at realgm.com is my email address. You can also check out my Facebook page. It's Danny LaRue NBA, DannyLeroux NBA. And I just changed the name from Daniel because I'm kind of transitioning that just to make things easier because I know some people get confused. And yeah, and there will be more traditional Real GM radios along the way. I actually recorded the same day as this, recorded with Ben Golliver, Sports Illustrated. We did almost 2 hours on Team USA and a lot of other stuff. I'm incredibly proud of that one as well. And we'll have other ones over the next couple weeks. Real GM Radio is a weekly podcast, but the weekly part of it is a little bit different, but there will be at least 4 per month during the quote-unquote dead time. Also, if you want to check out the NBA Utopia Project, it's something I started with the Sporting News, the idea being that other people would write on it, and they absolutely have. I have a couple more pieces for Sporting News that are coming out on it. Also, the CBA Encyclopedia at Real GM is still going strong. I'm working on some of my own material and have some great writers that are helping produce the other parts of the backbone of the encyclopedia itself, and we're going to work on some other CBA stuff for the people who are into that. So, thank you so much for listening. The response to this has been great. I really do appreciate it. And, of course, listen to Dunked On if you don't already. That's the podcast that Nate Duncan does that I'm a frequent guest on. Appreciate that. For whatever podcast like that you like, I encourage you to subscribe to it if you can. Give it a rating because those are things that help with advertisers. Those are things that help us, you know, be able to continue this. And I've been so fortunate that Real GM has given me this platform. I'm thankful every day for it. And that makes it easier for us to continue that moving forward. And so, thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.